is just a bit formal. The high level idea is the same. So basically, here we use a function fd to map edges from algorithm to edges in the optimal solution. It is fd is doing this map. Alright? So basically, what is fd? Fd means that the edges in optimal solution that share vertex with edge e. Okay, for example, if edge e is this one, then fe is these two edges. Okay, if fe is this, no, so if e is this one, then fe is these two yellow edges. So basically, that in optimal solution, which edges touch the edge e, and those edges will be fe. Okay, all right. Okay. So now there are two claims. The first one is, for every edge in optimal solution, there must be one edge selected by your algorithm such that E star is in FE. So what does it mean? It means that you just take out one yellow edge. You can guarantee there is at least one, or maybe exactly one red edge touching it. That's the claim, the first claim. Alright? In other words, it's not possible to have a red edge or have a yellow edge which have no connection to red edges. That's not possible. Alright? Why is this true? Let me draw something here. If I don't have a yellow color, I just pretend this is yellow. Okay? This is yellow, alright? This is a yellow edge in optimal solution. What's a red? I do have a red. Okay? There's some red edge. Somewhere. Okay? But it does not touch the yellow edge in the cluster. It's quite good. Okay? So it's not possible that one edge in optimal solution, it does not touch any red edge selected by your algorithm. It's not possible. Why? Now, one easy argument is the following. Say, okay, let's look at the moment when this node comes into the algorithm. Okay, this node comes, all right? According to your algorithm, you should map or match this node to a partner on the right, right? Okay? You should match this one to somebody on the right, okay? But it turns out you didn't match it. Right, because if I match, there's one red edge coming out, right? Then, done. The result is the proof, right? Okay, but it turns out that in your algorithm, you didn't match this person to anyone on the right. Why is that? It must be because of what? This body comes, right? This vertex comes. But you didn't match this person to anyone on the right. The reason, by the way, there do exist one edge like this, right? But you didn't choose it. Okay? You also didn't choose anyone else. But at least you didn't choose this person, right? You didn't choose it. You didn't match it. Why? Yeah, so it must be the case that this guy is already matched, right? Taken by some other people. Then what does it mean? What does it mean by this guy taken by some other people? It means there's a red edge like this. Okay? Taken means taken by the algorithm, right? So this person is taken by somebody already, and then that means there's a red edge like this. So your conclusion is, if there's no red edge going out from this point, there must be another red edge coming back from this one. Anyway, there must be some red edge touching your blue edge, right? Touching your optimal solution. Okay? Think about it. Basically, optimal solution is edge, right? It has to somehow overlap or connect with some red edge. Otherwise, there will be contradiction, right? Otherwise, your algorithm is not performing, it's not doing well, it's not doing the right thing. Okay? Well, so this is the first claim. The second time, by the lemma, which lemma? The lemma on the previous page. which means selecting one edge by your algorithm will only stop you from selecting two edges on optimum, right? Which means one red edge will only touch at most two yellow edges, right? Okay, only touch two yellow edges. So that means this FE is less than or equal to 2. Because FE means red edge mapped to yellow edge, right? So this FE is at most 2. And then you can have some deduction like this to say, oh, optimal solution's size, how many edges are matched in optimal solution, is at most FE, the summation of FE over all the edges chosen by the algorithm. Right, because I already showed yellow edge must touch red edge, right? Every yellow edge must touch yellow red edge. So I only need to look at those red edges, which yellow edges I touch, right? That will be all the optimal solution, right? You will never miss any yellow edge. Okay, so this one, because FE is at most 2, so I replace FE by 2, it becomes even larger, right? Okay? And then what's this? How many edges do you have in the algorithm? It's just the ALGI, right? For all the algorithm edges, every one of them, they will contribute a 2, right? Okay? So altogether it becomes 2 times the solution of algorithm, right? And that tells you optimal solution is almost 2 times algorithm. In other words, the ratio is larger than half, right? So you do algorithm divided by optimal, it becomes 1 over 2, larger than or equal to 1 over 2, right? 0, 1. Okay, now, as I told you, this is just a little bit formal proof compared to the high level idea we both agreed, right, in the last lecture. Okay? Make it closer. Okay. Well, so this is the end of the proof. Now, after this, what do you think I will do in the next slide? We have one algorithm which is very good. 0.5 approximate, or 0.5 competitive, right? Okay, what's next? They have shown, you cannot do better than that, right? So you need to show some lower bound. Alright. Okay, so how do we show lower bound? Well, here are two vertices, right? B1, B2. So this is the jobs I have, right? And now, we need to design some bad example for all the possible algorithms, right? Okay, so what are all the possible algorithms for this case? Now, let me give you one note first, B1. B1 connect to both B1 and B2. Okay, so what can your algorithm do? How many cases for your algorithm? Your algorithm can do this, can do that, can do that. So how many different actions your algorithm can do? Okay. 2. Which 2?
U1
to B1 or U1 to B2, right? Okay. Now, of course, 2 is a good answer, but not a 100% correct answer, okay? The algorithm can also do something else. Yeah, 0. So, algorithm can also say, I do not match B1 to any one of them, right? This is also one possible action from the algorithm. But this option actually is not good. Why? Because if you do not match it to any V, then algorithm performance is very bad. If you are the adversary, you just stop the instance now. You say, oh, in this instance, optimal is one edge matching. But your algorithm only matches 0, right? Ratio is arbitrarily bad, right? 0. So this first case, no good, right? How about the second case, match U1 to B1? Another case will be on the right, match U1 to B2. Okay, so if U1 is matched to B1, then what will you do? If you design a bad instance, what will you do? You need to
introduce another you, right? Okay, I introduce another you, like this, right? I say, oh, because you match, you want to be one, so I make my second node only connect to B1. And then you cannot match anything else, right? So basically, you are designing something which will make the algorithm regret about its earlier decision, right? Okay, so in this case, optimal is what? Optimal, oh sorry, I picked too wrong. Optimal is what? This, right? Okay, two edges, but your algorithm only match one edge. So, what will it do? 0.5, right? Okay? And similarly, if you it's on the right, it's just symmetric, right? Because B1, B2, they are indeed symmetric. So if you choose to match U1 to B2, I just connect U2 to B2. Again, you cannot match anything else, right? Only this red edge. But optimal solution, again, has two edges, right? Optimal solution is like this. Okay? So one is your algorithm, two is optimal solution. So again, it's one of the two. So no matter which case, right? So basically, your algorithm has three choices. For each choice, I have a future node coming in, making the optimal solution be two, right? And then your algorithm is only one. So you cannot do better than 0.5, no matter which algorithm, right? Okay, well, this finishes the low-down proof. Actually, very easy, right? This is a very easy example. Okay, so much about matching. Now, next, we'll talk about the third and also the last deterministic quadrant. And the last classic example, okay? The last example is scheduling. Now scheduling, we need a bit more preparation. So there's one page having notation about scheduling. It's worth paying attention to this because later on we have another lecture about scheduling. And if you know these symbols, they will be easier for you to understand those things. So basically scheduling means what? It means that you have a bunch of machines, okay? Like this. These are machines, okay? And then you have some jobs. The jobs we call it J, okay? And you need to assign jobs to machines. Some jobs to machine, red machine, some jobs to blue machine, okay? So this is the basic scenario of scheduling, assigning jobs to machines. Now, every job has a so-called size or processing time, called PJ, okay? For example, this job, one job can last 1 hour, another job is what, half an hour, etc. Okay, so this is the job's execution time or size. And in the general case, each machine has a speed, S9. So which means if a job, the size of 1 hour, is put on a machine with speed 2, then it only needs half an hour, right? Because the machine has speed 2. Okay? Alright? So that's why you see the actual processing time of job J on machine M is PJ over SI. So the size of the job divided by the speed of the machine. Okay? So that's the actual running time. Okay? Now, a schedule will assign jobs to machines. Alright? And then you have a way to compute the load of a machine. What's the load of a machine? The load of a machine is all the jobs assigned to the machine, you add their size together. This sum divided by the machine speed. That's the load of the machine. Okay? Alright? Just like this. This way. Alright? The summation of all PJ such that you match this job J to machine I. Okay? And divide by the speed of machine I. Okay? Well, so every machine has a load. Now what do you care about? You care about the largest load. Okay? For example, this machine load is 2 hours, this is 3 hours, this is 1 hour. Okay? So now the 3 hours will be bottleneck. That's the longest time one machine will take to finish the workload. Right? Okay, so you take the largest one, that is the so-called make span. Okay, we have a special word for make span here. Okay? Make span. Now, of course, scheduling problem has many objectives, but makespan will be one very important objective, and that's the objective we are talking about today. Okay, so let's see. These basically will be explained, right? So let's see some examples. Again, we here use a so-called simple greedy algorithm, but this time it's a true greedy, it's not fake greedy, not the greedy in the match. Okay? So this simple greedy algorithm is what? Well, before you look at this one, let me hide it for a moment. What do you think the greedy will be? For example, if jobs arrive one by one, right? First job coming in, you have to assign it right away. You cannot wait. You cannot wait for five jobs to arrive and then assign. You cannot do that, okay? One job arrives, assign it to some machine. Second job arrives, assign it to some machine. Okay? This is what you need to do. Now, what's that greedy? Can anyone tell me? Whenever you have a new job coming in, which machine do you assign to? Fast or a smallest load, very good, okay? You assign the job to the smallest load machine, which means you assign to the machine which finish the existing job earliest. Okay? So let me show you the picture. Okay? So basically, at the very beginning, it doesn't matter which machine you assign the job to. And then when the second job comes, it will be assigned to machine one. Why? Because machine one has nothing on it. A machine two has something on it, right? So machine one is ready earlier than machine two. Okay, so you assign the second job to machine one. And then where do you assign the third job? Here or here? One or two? One, right? Because the load on machine one is shorter, right? Okay, so you assign the new job to machine one, right? And then how about the next one? Oh, by the way, we are talking about the identical machine, okay? All the machines have speed one, so size is the same as the processing time. Okay, they are the same. Now, what's the next job? Yeah, machine two, very good, okay? What's the next job? One, okay, good. And then two, And then two, and then one, right? Okay, so at any time, you just check which machine finishes its already assigned jobs earlier. And then that machine will be the one you assign a new job to, right? Okay, good. Now, clear about the algorithm, right? So now let's see how good this algorithm is. Right? This one will be given to L1, right? Okay, so now let's show this algorithm can achieve 2 minus 1 over n competitive division. Now, whenever you try to prove some ratio, the first very important thing is to figure out how bad optimal solution will be. Okay, because you need to compare your algorithm's solution with optimal solution. But here, what is optimal solution is not very straightforward. You don't know what optimal solution is, right? You need to provide some bound for the optimal solution. Okay, now let's guess the bound first. This is a picture consisting of all the jobs, right? Now, the first very easy bound for the optimal schedule. This is pi star is optimal schedule. C pi star is a big span in optimal schedule. Okay? So I claim this optimal solution is at least 1 over n, the summation of all the pj. Why is that? Look at this picture. Okay, look at this picture. This is C pi star. Okay, this is C pi star. Now suppose this is optimal solution. Okay, I told you. Okay, imagine. Alright, or pretend this is optimal solution. Okay, optimal solution C pi star is there because it makes sense. Right? What is summation of pj? Easy, right? Especially if you did just a summation of these, and these, right? Right? You need to finish everything, right? Okay? Now, from this picture, what can you say? This machine, its make span is fully utilized because the job just finishes here, right? But for the first machine and third machine, there is still some gap there. Some idle time. Machine are not doing jobs. Right? Not doing jobs.
Okay, so you can see very clearly, C pi star times the number of machines is larger than equal to what? These, right? Tj summation, right? Okay? So, C pi j, C pi star, multiply m, right? Multiply m is at least the summation of all the Tj. Is that right? Okay? So basically, you can just understand it in a way that your optimal solution, the best you can do is to split all the workload very evenly across all the machines. This is the best you can do. As long as you cannot split like this, your main span will be a bit larger. Right? Okay? So average workload is a very ideal low amount for the optimal solutions main span. Right? Okay? So this is one thing. But we need another. One thing is not sufficient. We need another thing. Now, although that is not a bonus, I hope you didn't look at the slide yet. So, what's your guess? We need another low amount. Optimal solutions main span is at least something else. What's that something else? Well, in other words, this bound sometimes will be useless. So when will this bound be useless or will be not that effective? Now remember just now we say what? We say if you can ideally split all the workloads to m machines, then this will be equality, right? Okay? So when this is not equality, it means what? You cannot ideally split, right? And there is another extreme about not ideally split. Yeah, very good. There's a job very, very large. Okay? And there's another job very small. And you have two machines. What can you do? The only thing I can do is put the large job on machine one on the small job on machine two. But it's far from the average, right? Okay? So this bound will be almost useless. Therefore, we need another bound, which is this. The main span is at least the largest processing time, or largest size of jump, right? Okay, because the largest jump you cannot split, right? It cannot split into different machines. Okay? Yeah. So with these two bounds, I'm going to prove an easier thing, okay? Although the bound claim here is 2 minus 1 over m, I'm going to prove the case when you have two machines and so I'm going to prove when this part is not here. I'm going to prove two approximations. Okay, or two comparative. Alright, that's easier for sure, right? But let's see. Let's take the one machine which gives you the largest finishing time, which is the main span, right? And remove this job. Okay? So, machine I remove this purple job. Okay, so this purple job, at the time when it is added into your solution, meaning what? Meaning this time point. Okay, at this time point, the purple job is given to machine 2. Why is it given to machine 2? Because what? The finishing time here is earlier than this, and earlier than this, right? Okay, that's why you put the purple job here. So your main span, I compute it in some way like this. Okay? Yeah. This part, Li pi minus Pj, which is here, right? The main span, or the load of machine I minus this Pj, right? So this part is less than or equal to average workload. Is that correct? So if I take this time point
I tell you, okay, this time point, if I multiply by the number of machines, then it's less than or equal to the total workload. Is that right? Yeah, because every machine is busy, right? At this point, every machine is busy. So the workload here, this part, right, is fully utilized. It's less than your total workload, right? It's your less than your total sum of the Pj. Because no machine is idle, no machine is being free before this time, right? What is summation of P? Summation of P is this plus this plus this until this, right? I plus everything here is summation of P, right? Okay, so this part, this time, this one multiply M is at most the total workload. So for this one, any problem. The special moment, right? This special moment is less than or equal to the average workload. It's okay? Right? Because up to this moment, all the machines are busy, right? They are doing jobs. But they didn't finish yet. So the jobs being done by the machine are not yet the total workload, right? They didn't finish yet. Now with this, it means your midspan, which is equal to Li pi minus Pj plus Pj, right? Okay, because this is just the midspan. This is the longest machine time. Okay? So C pi, the midspan of this solution, is equal to Li pi. And then I subtract the Pj and plus the Pj. It's the same, right? Because this is zero. And then this part is at most average. What is average? Average is at most optimal solution, right? Okay? How about this part, Pj part? Pj is less than this, right? Okay? And this one is less than or equal to optimal solution. So, it's less than or equal to part 1 plus part 2, and each part is at most optimal solution. So they add together is at most 2 times optimal solution, right? Okay? So that means your max span, your solution, is at most twice the optimal solution. That means your ratio is 2, right? Your approximation ratio, your comparative ratio is 2, right? Okay. Well, so much about the easy proof. And during the break, you can figure out how to get this minus 1 over n. Okay? It's not difficult, because here we are throwing away many jobs, right? At least we throw away this job. We didn't calculate it. If you calculate this in, probably you can do this 1 over n. Okay? Well, so any question here about the upper bound? Now, if no question, remember, as usual, we are going to prove law, right? You cannot do better than something, right? You cannot do better than something. Well, we are using m equal to 2 as an example. Two machines. So two machines, you see, this theorem tells you you can do 2 minus half, which is 1.5, competitive, right? So now on the next page, we are going to show you cannot do better than 1.5 competitive. Okay? How to do that? Well, so again, it's not difficult. Basically, case, for example, I can do 2 jobs of unit length. Length 1, okay? Size 1. I can do 2 jobs. What can your algorithm do when you see these 2 jobs? Now you may challenge me, oh, you told us it's 1 by 1, right? Jobs come 1 by 1, how can you see 2 jobs? Well, let me give your algorithm a little bit benefit, right? A little bit more power. I allow you to see 2. Okay? Then what do you do? What can algorithm do? Basically, algorithm only has how many choices? 2 choices. Remember the 2 machines are the same. Okay? There are only 2 choices. One choice is you put them on the same
Yeah, no more jobs. Right. Well, because if I do not give you any more jobs, your solution is 2. Make spend 2, right? The optimal solution is what? 1. Put them on different machines. It's only 1. Right? So you already have a very bad ratio 2. Okay, good. Now, of course, you can also, so this one we already analyzed, right? For this case, you achieve a rate, can only achieve a ratio 2. Now, if you are able to put them on 2 different machines, now remember our philosophy. You try to make the algorithm regret, right? Meaning that globally, this solution is not good. Now, if this solution is not good, which one should be good? If a different machine solution by the algorithm is not good, then which one is good? Yeah, same is good, right? But how can you make the same machine solution good? You need to give the algorithm a large job, right? Okay? You give the algorithm a large job, like this. You give it a job with less 2. Okay? Now, in this case, you see, optimal solution definitely will do put the job less 2 here, right? Here, and put this job up. And that will give you a big span of 2, right? Okay? But the algorithm is doing what? The algorithm is doing 3, right? 1 plus 2. Because this new job 2, it can only put either on machine 1 or machine 2, right? No matter which machine, it's 3. So 3 divided by 2, this is 1.5, right? Remember, we said there are only 2 possibilities for the algorithm. 1 gives ratio 2, the other gives ratio 1.5. So nobody can do better than 1.5, right? Okay. Oh, so this is the end of part 1. Any question? I believe you might have a question. For example, how are you going to be tested in midterm or final exam about these? That's a very tough question for me either. Anyway, I believe for this kind of simple analysis, you should be able to do it, right? I think everyone agrees this one is simple. The matching one, the lower bound, is also simple, right? It's just a one page, it's very easy to understand. For these days, you should be able to know. But of course, I'm not telling you, I will not test you these examples. I will test you some new scenario. But, the analysis should not be too difficult, okay? Yeah, so this is some potential question you might have, I will answer. Okay, all right. Now, I guess we will now explain the second part, all right? And to let you know what we are going to talk about in the coming 1 hour, okay? Now, the second part is about the online decision making when you have some other uncertainties, okay? Now, the very famous problem is called secretary problem. What is secretary problem? Secretary problem means that you are a company, you try to recruit, hire some secretary, right? So there are candidates coming in. You can interview them. You can decide whether to give them an offer or not, right? But you only have one quota. You can only give one person the offer, right? But different from the real world. In the real world, usually, I will arrange an interview. After the interview, I have all the results. I choose the best one. Okay? So that's very good. Now, although this is a real case, but it's not very practical. What does it mean? Now, you know, the applicants sometimes come one by one, okay? So, or in some order, right? Now, maybe the first candidate, if you tell the candidate, please wait until December the 31st, when we tell you the result. Maybe in the middle, that candidate will get some other offer and he will leave, right? He will not wait for the offer. Okay? So a safer way will be to give offer right after the interview. So you interview somebody, you need to tell the candidate right away whether you take the candidate or not. Okay? So this is something that will also happen in reality. Alright? Now, maybe a trying, you know, so actually this is a famous example, okay? Suppose you are trying to find an important other, okay? Via some experience, okay? And then you need to decide after you spend some days with him or her, right? Okay? You cannot say, oh, I do multiple candidates at the same time. That's not good. Ethically not good. Also practically also not feasible, okay? So it's sequential order, alright? Now after one, you need to decide whether you consider it a good fit, right? Okay. So same scenario, like secretary, right? After interviewing one candidate, you need to decide right away whether you will hire this candidate as a secretary. Right? Okay? Now another more virtual scenario is like you walk in the forest and then there are some treasures along your way, okay? But you only have one bag, you can only take one treasure along your way, alright? And then you cannot go back, you cannot say, oh, because I think the earlier one is better. Can I go back to take the earlier one? No, you cannot do that. You go back earlier, and then you don't have sufficient time to walk out of the forest. Okay? You have a little time, you only keep walking, okay? So no time to go back. Alright? So again, it's a fixed out online scenario where after you make a decision, you cannot revoke it. You cannot say, because I see a better candidate, I fulfill the earlier offer. No, you cannot do that. Okay? That will hurt reputation. Alright? Okay. So much about the background. Now, what about the problem? So the problem usually, in the online problem, we talk about the so-called adversary, right? We try to design a very bad sequence for the algorithm. But here, if you are allowed to design bad sequence, then probably the algorithm cannot do much. Now, one first thing. Here, we assume you have n candidates, right? Now suppose you do not know this n. For example, n is 100, 1000, I don't know. Usually in practice you don't know, right? But if you don't know, the adversary can let the algorithm behave very bad. Okay? Now, our goal in the secretary problem is to see that best. Okay? Is to see that best. So if you are allowed to, so if the adversary is allowed to change this n, then no matter which candidate the algorithm picks, the adversary can always find a better one, right? Which arrives later. And then the algorithm will regret. Okay? So that means if you do not know the value of n, then the adversary can make your algorithm decision as bad as possible. Right? Okay. Now, suppose you do know this n. Will the adversary be weaker? Now, of course, weaker, but not too much weak. Okay? So, if the adversary can control the arriving order. Okay? So, remember, we say these candidates, they are rankable, which means you can imagine their numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay? You want to select the one which is larger, which has the largest value. Alright? Now, but if the adversary can change the data and change the order as he wish, then again, your algorithm cannot do much. Why? So basically, the algorithm will select somebody, right? The algorithm selects somebody, but the adversary can set the candidate, some of the candidate not selected by your algorithm to be very good, to be much better. And then because your algorithm didn't select it, so again, your algorithm performance will be very bad, right? Okay? So now, in order to have some meaningful results about this problem, we need to do some or make some assumption about the adversary. So, what kind of adversary are we assuming? So here we have the less powerful adversary. This adversary, firstly, will let you know what n is. So basically, it will tell you how many candidates it will do. All right. Second, the adversary cannot control the order of arrival. So the order of arrival of these candidates are random. Any permutation has equal chance, equal probability of showing up. Okay? For example, if you have three candidates, then then with 1 over 6 probability, you see 1, 2, 3. Right? 1 over 6, you see 1, 3, 2. 2, 1, 3, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 2, 1. Okay? Alright? So in this case, you can have some meaning for results. Alright? Okay. Now, before we present online algorithms, we first look at what is offline optimal algorithm. So offline optimal algorithm is very easy, right? You just choose the best one. Okay? So not much to say here. Not much to say here. The online algorithm here is a bit different from the earlier problems, because now the arriving order is arbitrary, is random. So now we are trying to maximize the probability that the algorithm chose the best candidate. Okay? So think about it. Maybe you have 40% chance choosing the best one. The other 60%, I choose the worst one. Don't worry. I don't care about the worst one part. Okay? I don't care about the best one. 40% best, 60% worst. It's better than 30% best, 70% second best. Okay? Remember, we only care about best candidate selection probability. I don't care other scenarios choices. Even if you select second best, it does not mean it's better than the worst. Okay? So although it's somewhat not so not so ideal, right? Because for me, if I have 30% selecting best, 70% second best, I will think it's pretty good, right? But this problem is not really this kind of optimization. It is trying to maximize the probability of selecting the best candidate. Other similar situations, ignore. Alright? Okay. So let's see one possible strategy. This strategy is very easy, and performance is not good, but it's not also not extremely bad. Alright? So this strategy says take the first candidate. Alright? So I know that whenever I say this, some Chinese idioms will come into your mind. Okay? You know when you choose the first candidate, right? Okay? So choosing first candidate. What's the probability of getting the best one? Oh, very good. 1 over n, right? Yeah, because every position, the best one showing up in every position has equal probability, right? So showing up in the first is also 1 over n, right? Equal probability. Good. Now we at least have a guarantee, right? The threshold. 1 over n is the at least something we can do, right? Okay. Well, but that's not so good, right? Not so good. That's why we need to think about other strategies. Now, the second strategy is pretty interesting. It actually is used in research as well. So there are some advanced algorithms using this kind of thinking as well. So what's the second strategy? The second strategy says, I'm going to split the candidates into two groups. Group 1 and group 2. I'll interview group 1 first. Okay? And then I will have a rough estimation about how good these candidates might be, right? And then, when I see group 2, I will compare them with group 1. Are you better than group 1? If you are better, I'm taking it. Alright? So you can see that, actually, there is a good chance that if this is true, it might be best. Well, only might be, right? So there will be a good probability that you will select the best candidate. Now, the straightforward splitting will happen half-half. So basically, it says candidates come in one by one. You interview first one, second one, third one, until n over 2 to see their quality. Alright? And then you do not select any of them. They are unlucky. They are only test. They are only test data. Okay? They will not be chosen. And then, second half. Whenever you see somebody better than the first half, better than everyone in the first half, you see that as well. Okay? Alright? Now this is the strategy. Now of course you worry about what's the probability of getting the best, right? Okay? So the probability of getting the best is at least this multiplied by this. What's these three parts? First of all, you need to make sure the best candidate leaves the second half. Right? Otherwise, you will lose it, right? Because it didn't take anyone from the first half. So first of all, you need to guarantee best candidate in the second half. Next thing is not a must, but it's good. The second best candidate is in the first half. Why do they require this? Yeah. Very good. Okay, so if the second best is in the second half, you have some chance to choose the second best, right? But if the second best is in the first half, the only one that can beat the first half will be the best one. Okay? So that means if both conditions are satisfied, and for sure you will select the best one. Right? Okay? Then what's the probability of these two? The best candidate in second half and is 1/2. Why? Because the other case is best candidate in first half, right? Okay? Same chance. Alright? So this is the half. How about this? Second best in first half. Yeah, again 1/2, right? Half. Why? Because another counterpart is second best in second half, right? Again, the same probability, right? Okay, so it's half times half, 1/4. Now there's a 25% chance you get the best candidate, right? Well, that's very good. Now remember, this is larger than or equal to. Why not equal to? Just now we said, if you fulfill both conditions, for sure you select the best one, right? But if you do not fulfill these two, for example, you only fulfill this one, not this one. Then you still have the chance to see that. The best, right? Okay?